and welcome to the Stay at Home School Mom Podcast. My name is Mary Ellen Barrett, and I am being joined by my good friend, Ginny Seufert. And together, we have combined 50 years experience of homeschooling. And we still feel like we're learning this, how to navigate all this and get it all done, especially me, because I'm still doing it. So thank you for joining us as we navigate together. But before we jump into today's topic, let's give a warm thank you to Seton Home Study School, our big sponsor here on the podcast. Seton is a great friend of the podcast. They have been supplying books, grading, counseling, and academic support to parents who homeschool their children for 40 years now. They're a leader in providing solid Catholic homeschool materials that you can feel comfortable using with your children. So check them out at www.setonhome.org. You'll get all the information there. Hello, Ginny. Today's a good topic, right?
Today's a topic we hear an awful lot. It's kind of called the S word in, among us experienced homeschoolers, socialization.
Yeah.
You hear this. In fact, I was talking to my granddaughters, had a couple of friends over, and they were saying that they were shocked to hear that my granddaughters were homeschooled because they seemed so normal.
Right. Everybody has this idea in their head of the kid, like the pale kid who's never allowed out in the sunlight.
Locked in the cage in the basement.
Only reads books, doesn't know anything about the world going on. Yeah, it's one of those roadblocks, what we're going to call roadblocks to homeschooling. And we're hoping to cover a bunch of these topics in the coming weeks. But people feel like if I homeschool my kid, they're going to be weird, friendless, you know, shaky and skinny and not able to talk to people.
And the funny thing is, in public schools now, they have kids that aren't sure if they're a boy or a girl. And some of them think they call them Furbies. They think they're like cats.
Yeah.
Litter boxes in the bathroom or something. I mean, some weird stuff.
There's weird things going on. That's very weird.
That's very, very strange. If you want to talk weird, public schools kids are too often really, really weird. So don't worry about that nice little homeschool kid who, you know, baked brownies this morning. That'll be okay. But it is something that people think about when they are considering homeschooling. And you and I have talked to lots of moms who are thinking about it. Who are my kids going to play with?
Yeah.
You hear that all the time. And I have to say, I do agree that it's a bigger problem than it was when I was a kid. And probably you're not that much behind me. although I won't insult you and say you're too close to me either. When you and I were kids, and I grew up in New York City. And the fact is, on a city street, there were kids outside playing all the time.
We had lived that too,
Two and three bedroom little houses or two flats or apartments on the block. And kids, there might have been 50 kids on the street.
Yeah. I live in suburban Long Island, so it's a suburb of New York City. And we were roving kids all over the place.
Yep.
All over the place. And after school, you'd get home, you'd have a snack, and somebody'd be knocking on your door calling for you.
Right away.
You'd get to play outside for an hour or two before you had to come in and do your homework and have dinner and all that kind of stuff. There was rarely a time that you weren't outside in the afternoon playing. It had to be like very inclement weather. There were just a lot of kids around.
Everywhere.
And now there aren't, when we moved to the house we're in now, we're here 20 something years, 22 years, I think. My kids have always been the only kids on the street.
Isn't that sad?
People don't have children anymore.
Well, sometimes they don't have kids. Sometimes they do have kids, but the kids are in after school programs. They're in daycare. They're in aftercare. They have a nanny. The nanny doesn't want to watch your kids. She's not being paid to do that. So that's a problem. But kids, you have to make a play date. You have to call up and say, can your little Billy come over and play with my Johnny? As opposed to like what you and I are talking about. My mother threw us out of the house. Houses were teeny weeny in those days.
Right.
She didn't want a bunch of kids running around. Get out of here.
Yeah.
I don't want to see your face.
Not on my clean kitchen floor. Get out.
Yeah. Get out of here. I don't want to see you. I've told my grandkids they can't believe it. I used to walk, maybe about a mile to the movies every Saturday with my friends. And they thought you were, when I was like six, and they said, you were 6 years old walking with, but there were 30 of us.
Yeah. Nope.
I was never by myself. I think a lone child can be a target. I think that's what parents worry about, but there were no lone kids.
No.
No lone kid.
I grew up, four houses and across the street was my elementary school. So it was just, you walked half a block and then across the street and there it was right there on the corner. And so I would walk. I mean, from the time first grade, we moved there when I was in first grade. So 6, 7 years old. But as I was walking that little half block, there were other kids around walking to school.
Like
you walked out of the house when you saw that kid, you know, a friend. walk by your house and you just joined them on the walk. You were never alone. You really were never alone. There were kids everywhere.
You gravitated towards certain kids of your own age or that were just a lot of fun or whatever the case. They like to read like you do, whatever. But that's not the case anymore. So I do feel sorry for moms in the sense that they can't say, oh, I'll just let the kids outside to play at 3 o'clock. That's not going to happen. What they have to be is a little bit more aggressive than, say, your mom or my mom ever thought about being. If you go to the playground, your little guy finds a buddy, you know, that he loves playing with, you have to kind of go over to the mom or the nanny, whoever's there, and say, oh, those kids get along so well. We live right down there in that greenhouse. You know, where do you live? Sort of thing.
Yeah, you have to be social.
You have to be social and a little bit more aggressive. Same thing with activities. If you send your little Janie to the AYSO soccer in your community, and she comes home every time talking about her friend Ashley that she really likes, well, you know, get to the practice, find Ashley's mom and say, oh, my Janie loves your Ashley. Tuesday, can we bring her home for supper? Here's my number. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you have to be a lot more aggressive than our moms ever thought of it. My mother couldn't have cared if I had a friend. She just presumed I'd make them.
Yeah, mine too. My mother would no more have driven me to a play date than she would have, you know, driven to the moon. It just didn't happen. She just
it was
wouldn't.
Just, I know. No, just, it just never happened when we
it
were
kids.
It just
wasn't an issue. But you do. I noticed, you know, we have a Facebook group for my village, the moms.
Sure.
It's a mom's Facebook group. And I've noticed that a bunch of ladies, and I kind of admire them for it, have posted lately, oh, I have a four-year-old little boy. We're going to be at this park at this time on this day. Does anybody have like a four-year-old you want to meet there? And I thought, well, that was clever, you know, just to get a bunch of people with four-year-olds to come. And that's using social media for good, I think. So a couple of them did have a couple of meetups with 3 and 4 year olds just to meet, you know, people with kids their own age. And I really admired that, because that really is kind of putting yourself out there a little bit. And that's
awkward
for some people.
It is putting yourself out there. And it's kind of sad they have to do it, but they do have to do it.
Yeah.
They absolutely have to do it. They're being wise. I agree with you. That's an actual good use of social media, which it's not all that great. And just a little word here, you know, a lot of our homeschool moms, and you see this on social media an awful lot, they want their kids to play with other great Catholic kids from great Catholic families.
Of course, that's the ideal. The ideal is that everybody in the world is Catholic and everybody's nice, but that's...
And everybody comes to a family with 9 kids, you know.
Yeah, that's just not the reality of while you don't want to have your kid playing with the local hoodlums, you do. There are nice families out there who don't necessarily homeschool, or nice families who aren't Catholic. So you just kind of have to go sometimes when you're seeking out friends for your children, find the nice kid, the polite kid who shares the same interests. They're on the soccer team. They're on the basketball team. They all like, you know, step dancing, whatever. That's part of why we homeschool is to expose them to the world in a very gentle manner. And when, you know, when they're old enough to do these things, but you don't want them so segregated from the population in general that they become that weird kid who can't like socialize with other people. Take them to the library groups and or the library. Our library has all kinds of activities for different age group kids, you know, crafts and all kinds of lectures and book clubs and stuff. Take them to something like that and see if you can find, you know, another nice kid.
And that's, we'll get into that in a minute, like how to deal with the kids that aren't that nice, because that's an issue these days.
Sure.
But absolutely. You don't have to sit there and like sort of check out the nanny. So is the family Catholic? Do they go to Mass on Sunday? It's okay. In fact, sometimes I found that's a learning experience. I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood, largely Jewish. And I knew lots of Jewish kids, and I knew all about their holidays. And to this day, I have great respect for their love of their faith. I grew up with Orthodox Jews, many of them, who take the Sabbath very seriously. Mm-hmm. We Catholics could learn something from that. We really could.
Oh, yeah. I grew up on a street that had, within a mile, 3 synagogues. And every Saturday you'd see the families walking to synagogue.
They can't drive,
the Orthodox. So I grew up in a very Jewish area too. And most of my friends, I went to more bar mitzvahs than I ever did communion parties. it was just the reality of the situation. If I couldn't have been friends with Jewish people, I would have had no friends, you know? So, and it was fine because we were very devout mass going Catholics. And I grew up in that household, but
not everybody's looking to convert your kid to their religion.
No. And you could be the light under the bushel there. You know, you might, your faith might shine out on them at some point. So, you know, it, you can't limit who your children are going to be friends with. You should seek a nice wide circle, and then they'll find like their best friend, their buddy, the person who they really, really like. You don't need a million friends for them, but everybody does need at least one buddy, I think.
Oh, kids, it's nice for kids to have friends. And now that we've talked about it, it's nice for kids to have friends from all over. You do want your children to meet other homeschooled kids if it's possible.
Sure.
And unless you live on a cabin on a mountain in the middle of nowhere, there are other homeschoolers nearby. There's just
Yeah, it's become so much more acceptable and popular, and it's a viable option now. Whereas when we both started, it was a lot more rare. The Catholic homeschool group here on Long Island, I've mentioned this before, is just huge. It's just, I think it's like 300 families. And we were the 25th family to join.
Yeah.
And that it dwindles in comparison to the Leah group, which is the Protestants. And then there's just secular ones. I didn't know this, but for the last 20 years, there's been a secular co-op in my village.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all.
And I didn't know that at all. You know, these are not people with any religious affiliation. They all use the same online program. It's like PowerSchool or something like that, which I would never use. But they all like have formed a co-op around the fact that they all use this particular thing, and which is very nice. You know, so they're out there. You just have to find them.
It's not that they're out there like you're tripping over them.
Yeah.
They're all, so how do you actually find them though? So I've decided to homeschool. I don't really know any homeschoolers. How do I find some? One thing is local public libraries often have programs for homeschooled kids.
Yep. Yeah.
My daughter-in-law belonged to one for years. Museums sometimes have programs for homeschooled kids if you call about that. And even if the program isn't necessarily for kids your children's age, sometimes it's okay to go anyhow, just so you meet these other homeschool families who also might have kids your children's age. It's just, you know, not in that particular program. Certainly libraries, museums, that sort of thing. The other thing, I don't want to get into trouble for saying this, but you really want to check out the very Orthodox Catholic parishes.
Yeah.
The Latin Mass parishes, which...
I don't know why you'd get in trouble for saying that, but I don't think
Latin Mass is sort of like not too popular now, but maybe places that used to have Latin Mass before the Pope came out with a statement.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true.
The FSSP, the Fraternity of St. Peter, the Institute of Christ the King, parishes run by them. Actually in Chicago, Opus Dei has a huge presence and they don't have a Latin Mass, but they have a very, very reverent Mass. They have parishes here. Homeschoolers tend to flock to the Orthodox parishes.
Right. Yeah. The more reverent masses.
Yes.
You don't generally find them at like a guitar mass kind of a situation. Mm-hmm. And that's good advice because if you see, especially if you go to daily mass, so you're at an 8 a.m. or a 9 a.m. mass and you see a bunch of ladies with a bunch of kids. They're probably homeschooled and you can go up and introduce yourself and say, hey, I'm new to the homeschooling community. What's going on around here? And
homeschoolers are very welcoming.
Yeah, they are. They'll tell you all about it. I can't tell you how many people I've signed up to our local groups or directed people to other groups that would suit them better. So you just have to kind of put yourself out there. The other thing is you can just search on Facebook, like put in your town name or your city name and homeschooler and see what pops up because most groups do or co-ops have a Facebook page.
Yeah.
It's a very easy way to find things.
Homeschoolers of Bergen County, New Jersey, mm-hmm. which I've never lived there, but my grandkids live there and they're homeschooled.
Ah.
So I like to kind of see what's going on. I mean, I didn't lie about it. I told them I'm a former homeschooler and my grandkids live there and they were happy to have me in the group. But yeah, if you do something like that, homeschoolers of Suffolk County, Long Island or something, you'll find something. Yeah. And even if it's the secular group and it doesn't, usually my own experience with homeschoolers has been, if you say, well, I'd really like to find Catholics so we can, you know, do activities together. They almost always know somebody.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
When I started, as you just said, and it's absolutely true, there were like no homeschoolers. And Catholics, for the most part, we were late getting in the game because we had parish schools.
Right. Yeah. The Protestants did it first because they didn't have that kind of Catholic school or that Christian school kind of back up the way, you know, there's a parish school in every parish, really.
Right.
I mean, you can find parish schools everywhere. The Christians didn't have that. So yeah, we were late to the party on
that. But I found they were lovely. Like that's who I contacted just for information about the legal situation in the state mm-hmm. where I was homeschooling and, you know, what's going on. They were super duper nice. Now, I've heard stories of, you know, you join the Christian group and they're trying to, you know, get your kids to leave the Catholic faith and join their church. I'm not saying I put my kids in a Protestant co-op necessarily.
No, but you could have a Protestant, a Methodist child over to swim in your pool or something, sure. You know,
or play with your kids in the park or something yeah. of that nature. I mean, you absolutely could do that. So my own experience has been that homeschoolers who are not necessarily who you're looking for, they're either a different faith persuasion or they're, as you say, secular, they could be atheists for all we know. They tend to be really nice people.
They do. They want the best for their children, same as everybody else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and they're, as long as, like I said, as long as they're, you know, not hooligans or something, it's fine for your kids to play with people outside of their bubble. It really is. It's actually a very good thing. And if you are searching, if it is that important to you, if you are searching on like Facebook, our page is Long Island Catholic Homeschoolers. So you could put Catholic in there, you know, any town Catholic homeschoolers and see what comes up. You probably will get the local Catholic homeschool group that way too.
Yeah. It's not that hard. And then once you meet one or two people and you're thinking, oh, these are really nice people, I'd like to get to know them better. Well, see what, you know, you have to put yourself out a little bit, maybe have say, oh, you know, after church on Sunday, I'm going to have coffee and donuts at my house. Mm-hmm. Why don't you bring the family over, the two families over? I always say Sunday because that's so easy. It's either bagels or donuts and you have to make coffee and tea.
Right. Yeah. That's much the easiest way to entertain, I have found. Absolutely. Right after mass, kids yep. run off the energy in the backyard or, you know, in the playroom or whatever. And the parents can get to know each other a little bit. And it's an hour. It's usually an hour.
Yeah. Most people want to get home and make their Sunday dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's a nice thing to do. You can meet at a park or a church or someone's house. Maybe on Fridays tends to be a good day because a lot of people are sort of worn out by the homeschool week. Mm-hmm. If you offer them a fun event on Fridays, they're willing to take up on. So just say, oh, the weather's going to be beautiful on Friday. Why don't we all meet over at the common park on such and such a street
yeah.
for lunch?
And people are always willing to ditch schoolwork on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah, they are. Friday is the best day for that. Sometimes we had a rosary group for a while, where the moms would say the rosary and the kids would run around torturing each other or whatever.
Yeah, we did that too. We met at a local, it's a Gold Coast mansion that's a museum and had beautiful
oh, cool.
gardens. Yeah. So for years, that's where our homeschool group would meet. We would do it like 6 weeks in the fall and then 6 weeks in the spring. So every week you'd come and the moms would pray the rosary and we'd have our flasks of coffee and the kids would just run around like maniacs. And it was great. It was yeah. just lovely.
And then the other thing is, if you did not find that Facebook page when you were looking, set one up. It's not that hard.
Oh, no. It's the easiest thing in the world. Really? Yeah. It's so easy.
So, you know, you set up, you know, Catholic homeschoolers of, you know, Washington County, Vermont, or some such thing like that. And tell people about it, invite them to like it. And you'll find that you will meet other people. Now, that's not to say that all of this isn't going to have a few problems. And we can discuss those in a minute. But I think we should take a break first. You know, Mary Ellen mentioned Seton Home Study School is our premier sponsor. We are very grateful to them. They offer us all sorts of services we could never do on our own, like editing, for example.
Yeah, we could not.
We could not. But we do have other sponsors, and we're very grateful to them as well. So we're going to take a fast break and just listen to a message.
It's great. I think my Seton education really gave me a lot of the truth, but it was cool to go into an area where you could dialogue with other people and kind of pursue the truth in a different way than just than receiving it. To learn not only in the class how to be good or what is good, but then to also learn outside the class, learning through relationship. I've grown so much as an individual because I can engage not only with the text we read in class, but anything I encounter in the world, I am able to say, okay, this is Hegel talking. I can figure out how to find the truth with people who don't even really know how to dialogue well, because I've been taught so well how to dialogue in the classroom and outside of the classroom with sparring with friends.
I'm Anthony Klein, a Seton Home Study School graduate and a junior here at Belmont Abbey's Honors College.
The Honors College at Belmont Abbey. To learn more, visit www.bac.edu/honors.
Thank Thank you and welcome back. Please check out our sponsor's website. We are, as Ginny mentioned, very, very grateful for everybody who supports the podcast here and it makes it possible. And while I'm talking about that, if you wouldn't mind just going to wherever you're listening and give us a like and a five-star review, that would be really helpful. It gets us kind of to the top of the page there so more people have access to the podcast. So thanks very much.
We've been thrilled with the number of people that have one of my daughters checked out the number of reviews we have. I wouldn't know even how to do that, I don't think, but she's, wow, Ma, that's really good. Of course, I suspect she doesn't think I can do anything right.
No, we are very, very blessed because people have been incredibly kind and supportive of the podcast.
Yeah, they have.
And it's been such a thrill for us because we didn't think anybody was going to listen to this.
We'll do it. All right. Sounds good. Cool.
Yeah. So we thought we'd do it for a couple of months and then everybody would be sick of like supporting these two people who are talking to nobody. And it turns out, you know, people are very kind. So thank you all for that. Very, very much.
So we just talked about like how to get to meet people, but now there is a problem. And, you know, I was talking to one of my daughters last week and she has three young kids. The oldest one is in first grade. And then she has like a preschooler and a baby. And she's had kids over to her house who seem to be like people she met at church. They seem to be nice people, you know, and the kids are horrible.
Oh, gosh, that's the worst.
They tell their parents to shut up.
Yeah, that's the worst.
And she's really strict with her. Like her kids, they're lovely kids. Like they're my grandchildren, a tad prejudiced, of course. But they really are nice kids. They say please and thank you, except for the baby. And she's learning. But she's horrified by how they tell their moms to shut up. One of them, the mother put the kid on the counter to like tie her shoes or something. Kids on the kitchen counter. Kid starts crawling around on the kitchen counter.
Oh, God.
Right in front of the mother, my daughter says, I didn't know, what do you say? Don't crawl on my counter? She says, nothing I ever practiced.
No, yeah, people's inability to discipline their own children is problematic because your children might pick up that kind of habit of saying, shut up to you, or, you know, my kids would once. That would happen once.
Yeah, my house too, but you don't want to have to go through that if you don't
No, you don't. And you don't want your kids to pick up other people's bad parenting. And that's what
just saying no, like you not shut up. And I'm shocked at the number of kids who tell their parents, no, I don't want to go.
Yeah, I know. Or they have a fit when it's time to leave. Yeah. It's that is a problem. So how do you deal with that? Like,
I don't think you have to give up on them right away because if you did, your kids would have no friends. It's a lot of bad discipline in this country now. One of the things that I did, and I did this years ago when kids, I think, were generally better behaved, but I see this, my daughter said it works for her too. Have the kids to your house without their parents.
Right. Yeah. I've done that where you can gently say, oh, we don't do that here.
Right.
Or that's not, we don't speak like that here. I don't like to hear that word or whatever it is. Gently, kindly, you know. But you are exerting a little bit of discipline. We have rules in this house and we all follow them when we're here. And you have to do that.
I find sometimes kids actually respond really well to it.
Yeah.
I think kids that are not well disciplined are sort of like thrashing around. They're miserable. They're looking for their fences, for their boundaries, and they can't find them.
The structure and those boundaries and that kind of discipline that they're experiencing is comforting to a child. You know, somebody's in charge here. Somebody's taking care of me. Somebody's not letting me go crazy. I think in some ways it's very comforting to children.
It is. No, in fact, there's a book I read years ago, Bringing Up Bebe. And it was not a Catholic book about parenting. It was a book about parenting in France, an American who had moved to France. And she was shocked at how well-behaved the kids were.
Oh, yes. I've heard about this book.
Well, I have to tell you, it's true, by the way. My husband and I we were on vacation. We went to the palace at Versailles. And there were a bunch of fourth graders running around playing outside. Obviously, they were waiting to go in. Mm-hmm. And their teacher calls them and says, line up. And all the kids just went into line. Wow. That would never happen in a fourth grade in the United States.
Yeah, no, I don't think it would, unfortunately.
Not like that. Not like, that's it. They just went in line. And what they said is, it's not that the French are mean to their kids. They're very nice to their kids. But they set up what they call a framework. And this is what your framework is. And within that framework, you have lots and lots of freedom. You can do more or less what you want, but don't step outside the frame. So kids, I think, do find that very comforting. I know one time I had a little boy, my daughter was in kindergarten, and this little boy comes and puts his shoe in front of my face. It was clearly untied. He wanted me to tie it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I said,
wasn't kicking you in the face.
Can I do something for you? And he says, tie it.
Ooh.
I said, is there anything I can do for you? And he said, tie my shoe. And my daughter looks at him and says, she's not going to do it if you don't say please.
Good for her.
I mean, I did nothing if they didn't say please. So I think that sometimes kids who need the better upbringing get a little bit of it from example in your kids. And you know what? I think moms do too. I think moms, you know, we had Ray Guarundi on our program, Dr. Ray, who I love.
Listen to
him anytime you want to get some good advice. And he said that he feels that it was his industry or his profession, I should say, of family therapist that like ruined parenting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's very vocal about that.
He's
very vocal about that. And if you don't watch him, he's on EWTN. He's on Sirius Radio to listen to. He's got a YouTube channel. He's often on Instagram. He has little reels on there. You gotta find Ray.
Ray is great. But his whole thing is that parents who want to do the right thing, they love their children. They love their kids as much as I love mine. But somebody told them, if you look at the kid cross-eyed, you've ruined him for life.
Yeah, you can't upset them. They can't be unhappy for 2 minutes.
For 10 seconds.
Yeah.
You have to meet their every, and by meeting their every demand, as soon as they make that demand, that's how they'll feel happy and comfortable. So parents say, oh, all right. Then when they see their kids are horrible.
Yeah. And nobody wants to be around them.
Yeah. Then they don't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
So I do think that sometimes if you have a mom who sort of is calmer, but her kids are well-behaved, sometimes a mom can pick up a trick.
Yeah. So you will rub off on moms. Like your good habits do rub off. The same way bad habits rub off on people, good habits rub off on people as well. Some of my best parenting moments have come because I surrounded myself with good moms, you know, and I learned from them, and all of their good mom skills kind of rubbed off on me. My own mother included, but my mother was quite sick and passed away way too young. But certainly my mom friends, my close friends, helped me a lot.
And I think if mom who doesn't have good control can say to her kids, well, every time you're at Mrs. Supert's house, you say, please, I see that.
Yeah.
You know, it gives her a little bit of a backbone that she didn't have otherwise.
Right. There's, I always think of this quote from St. John Paul II, freedom consists not in doing what we like, but in having the right to do what we ought.
Yeah.
So when you give your kids too much freedom or the freedom to just do whatever they want, you're really holding them back. And we've talked about discipline. We're getting off track again.
and you hate parenting. And I'm convinced that's one of the reasons that people have smaller families today, because if you have two miserable brats, why would you want a third?
It's true. Why would you do that to yourself?
But you're right. We're getting off track here. So we talked a little bit about how to get buddies for your friends, but I don't think we can ignore the fact that mom wants a few buddies too.
Yeah. It can be very lonely and overwhelming to just, you're home with a bunch of kids all day. You're responsible for their education. You're responsible for getting the house clean. Maybe you have a job, part-time job or a full-time job. You have a marriage to take care of. And it's isolating. It can be very isolating. Like you're always working, you're always doing. And sometimes you just need a friend, like just something.
Well, this was my number one problem, because what happened to me, I had my children in Catholic school in New York. I loved it. I bought a house. We moved because my husband's job. Why does anybody move? Mm-hmm. And I bought a house a block from a Catholic church and a Catholic school. And in my fantasies, I was going to be dropping my kids off at the school in the morning and walking across the street and going to church, you know, and going to daily mass with my other kids. And I thought it would just be so wonderful. Well, the school turned out not to be so wonderful. My kids were out by November 1st.
Gosh.
And it was that bad. But here's the thing. So when you move to a new area, where do you make friends? At the bus stop? when you volunteer to be a class mom.
Yeah, that's where you usually
find
them.
Off at school, you know, that type of thing. And my best friend was back in New York, as was, you know, my sister, all my friends, my parish, my school that I loved. It was all gone. And here I was just with, I think I had six or seven at the time. I don't remember. It's all a blur. But I remember being pregnant.
Yeah, and that's, you must have been lonely for a while.
I was horribly, that was the worst part of moving. And my husband would tell you, it took me like a year or two to get over it. And to be perfectly honest, I never made another really good friend like I had in New York.
No.
I never really, I made enough nice acquaintances and I made a happy life for myself. And then as time went by, you know, fairly fast, my daughters hit the age where they were, you know, older and I wasn't constantly just watching kids. But I never really had friends like that. It can be very, very lonely. It can.
Yeah.
And so what do? Well, one thing is to take the bull by the horns yourself. You can't wait for other people to walk up to you and say, gee, do you need a buddy?
Want to be friends?
not going to happen. But you might meet people at church. When I moved, so after we left Chicago, my husband and I bought a cabin in Kentucky. And people down south, you actually wrote an article about this. People down south are really, really friendly.
They are. It is just a lovely place to be. To make friends, I think it's easier probably in a southern state than it is up here in, you know, nasty New York.
Just, but they're always asking, you know, if I go to mass on Sunday, where's Ed? Aww. He didn't come with you this? People are just so, so nice. So certainly tell your church acquaintances, oh, you people are so nice. Do you have like a daily, do you have a rosary or something?
Yeah.
Do people get together? Sometimes your church will make an announcement and you're thinking, oh, I have so many kids, I can't do that. Try to do it anyhow. Yeah. You know, if they're going to have a dinner, go anyhow, get a babysitter.
Yes. Try to get involved in something. After a daily mass here, it's 6:30 in the morning. It's just dreadful. Everybody would go across. It's just so early. But everybody would go across the street to a coffee shop, like all the ladies, not all of them, but a lot of them. Right. And just have a cup of coffee and a piece of toast, you know, just to kind of gather together. And it's so early in the morning. It's before any of, you know, anything's really going on. And then the coffee shop closed. So that stopped happening. But if you can find something like that, like maybe after daily mass, they're praying the rosary. Nobody's going to mind if you have your kids with you to do that. Or if you see in the bulletin that there's some, you know, hospitality event, or there's a Christian mothers group or something like that, make every effort to go, because you might find your tribe there.
Yeah.
Or you might find the people who introduce you to your tribe.
Who introduce you, right. And the other thing is, if you do meet a few people, like I had my best friend in New York, we met at the library. Our kids both were in the library reading club, and we both had babies that we were sitting upstairs with, and that's how we got to be buddies. But what really did it was at some point we said, you know, we should get together without the kids on a Friday night and play Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. Did you really play Trivial
Pursuit? We did. We played Trivial Pursuit. I'm really good at Trivial Pursuit.
I love it. But, you know, the new games, they have new questions. I can't answer any of them.
No, I know. First of all, they ask about sports or modern culture. I'm dead.
Yes, me too. I have the old original game.
Yeah, that was me. But we would get together. We'd have a Halloween party. A bunch of us kind of joined in. Mm-hmm. And we had a Halloween party. This is when my kids were still in school. So on Fridays, the school had a school mass, and we'd all go to the school mass with our little kids. And then we'd meet at somebody's house for coffee. But I think an adult outing can make all the difference in the world.
Oh, sure.
It's really something to look forward to.
You can be yourself rather than somebody's mom for a few hours.
Just for a little while.
It's yeah, just forever. For a few hours. You can go see a movie or sit in a coffee shop or have a glass of wine or whatever. And you're just you. And you're not, you know, you're not that person. So it is, it's very refreshing to be able to be just yourself with a girlfriend.
Yeah. So definitely think about, you know, activities without your kids occasionally. The other thing is, think about what you do and what you do well. Don't laugh, but I have a sourdough in my refrigerator, a sourdough starter.
You keep promising to give me some. I want
next time I see you, I'm going to bring you some starter. And I bake sourdough bread quite often. And if those of you that don't know it, if you don't bake your bread, the starter gets kind of old. You have to refresh it. So what I'll do a lot of times is bake a loaf that I really have no reason to eat, and I'll give it to somebody. just bring a loaf of sourdough bread to the lady that runs the nursery in my town. She mentioned to me she likes sourdough bread. Next time I went to buy some, you know, marigolds, I brought her a loaf.
Oh, that was nice. Yeah, but that's how you make a friend, though. That's really nice.
But it was like, and you know, then she's telling me, well, she doesn't want to take money for the flowers. I mean, you know, just this is how people are. When you're nice to people, I have found people are nice right back. That was Mother Teresa's big thing. Give everybody a big smile.
Yeah, it costs nothing and it can make you a friend. It really can.
So that's one thing. Do you sew? I'm a sewer also. So if you see a little girl and you sew and the kid's hem is sagging or something, say to the mom, gee, you know what? I could fix that in 3 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Nobody sews anymore. I sew too. But nobody would fix it. They'd throw out the dress. So they would appreciate that.
I could fix that in a few minutes. Do you want me to do that for you? Mm-hmm. You know, and something like sometimes things like that, it's not a big deal, but all of a sudden somebody else, wow, she's really nice. She, for the 2 minutes it took you to fix the hem.
Right.
It's like you gave them a pot of gold. You know, it's not that. So those types of little things. The other thing that we did, and this was a bigger deal, but I think it was great for my kids. We had when my kids were teenagers and early 20s, we had a family group that we called the White Tornado because we cleaned. If you had a miscarriage or there was a death in your family or somebody was going to be, you know, going to be having company because you're having the repast after the funeral, we'd go over and clean the house during the funeral.
That's nice. That's a huge blessing.
It wasn't, you know, but it was a blessing for the people we did it for. It started when a really good friend of mine got cancer and she was going for chemo. And we talked about it and we said, you know, what would be better than to come home after chemo? I mean, what could be worse than chemo?
Oh no.
And the house is spotless.
Oh yeah, that would be such a gift. Like, and you can sit and be not feel well and look around and not be overwhelmed by a mess.
Or what you think you should have done. If only I didn't have this cancer, I would, you know, I would have mopped my floor this morning. And there was, and I have to say, in my case, I had six daughters. Even if three or four of us showed up, you know, four people hit a house and we could go through it really, really quickly in an hour or so. And people would, and I remember another friend had a miscarriage. We went over and did her house. It sounds like I'm trying to say we're nicer than we were. It wasn't all that big a deal. I cleaned every day anyhow.
Right. Yeah. So what's the difference if you vacuum somebody else's rug, you know, for 5 minutes?
It's not a big deal. It sounds like a bigger deal than it was, but it was really, really appreciated over and beyond the effort that we put in, to be honest, because there were so many of us that we could just go in and do it. So look for opportunities to help your neighbor.
Yeah, service.
If there's a snowstorm, call your neighbor up and say, your friend up, listen, I'm going to run to the store in this miserable storm. Do you need anything? I'll pick it up for you.
Yeah, and that's another thing, especially if they're locked in with little kids or something and you know, schlepping kids out in the car in rain or snow or anything like that. It's just such a nightmare.
Who wants to bring a newborn out into a snowstorm?
Yeah, so those little acts of service can really kind of bind you to people in a very real and loving way. And so you're making friends that way when you seek out those opportunities.
And then just kind of finally, join local groups. And I can't tell you what local groups, you know, if you're Italian, join the Italian American Society, or if you're Irish, join the Hibernians.
I'm a Hibernian.
Are you a Hibernian?
I'm a Hibernian. Yes, my husband and I are Hibernians.
But, there's lions and there's elks and there's, I don't even know who all these people are. Knights of Columbus is big in my parish in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And they usually have a ladies auxiliary.
They do. Yep. I am not in that, but my husband's a knight. There's all kinds of things like that. You can find them.
Friends of the public library. Go over and help at the library.
Yeah. Or there's historical societies or beautification societies. You know, if you like to garden and plant. In our village, they have a beautification society, so they jazz up seasonally all the public spaces. And those people seem to have a lot of fun doing it, I have to tell you.
They do have it. My daughter, my one daughter lives in a town like that, where the local garden club goes around and just plants little corner planters and that sort of stuff. The place looks gorgeous, first of all. And I'm a gardener. It's a lot of fun to plant something when you like gardening.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have an interest like that, seek out the people who share that interest and join that club or that society or, you know, and again, local libraries often have lists of local organizations because very frequently they'll meet in a local library, you know, because libraries are somewhat community centers now.
And it's free. They don't have to rent a space.
Yeah. So seek out those kinds of interest-based activities and you might, again, find your tribe. You might find your people there. So those are a lot of good suggestions.
Yeah. And then just the final thing that I wanted to mention, like I say, when I first moved to Chicago, I never really found a great buddy after that. Mm-hmm. But when I'd get blue about it, and I did, I don't want to make it sound too bad because I did have enough friends, even if they were never really close friends like I had in New York. But I remember thinking to myself, you know, Mom, Pa, Ingalls, remember the Big Woods of Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have any friends.
No, no.
And the kids played with each other.
Yeah.
And when they moved to Kansas, they had even fewer friends.
Yeah, they were out in the wilderness by themselves,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they were out in the wilderness. If you think of Abe Lincoln, he was raised in a cabin in the woods. He became president. Was he weird?
Not that we know of.
Yeah, right. But, you know what I'm saying? I mean, was he weird and unsocialized?
No. He gave speeches. He became the president. Yeah,
yeah, he became president of the United States, had local businesses. Andrew Jackson is even more interesting in some ways. He lost his entire family when he was a preteen or something. He was very early teen, I think. The entire family died.
Right, yeah.
He was raised during the revolutions, and the family died. And they didn't have, like, foster care in those days. He kind of raised himself, I guess, moving in and providing help or something. Became a decorated general and president of the United States.
Yeah, so, I mean, he did okay by himself, even without having best friends and going out to play every afternoon or whatever. Yeah, so, it's even if you can't find, like, a huge tribe, your kids will probably be all right. And again, I'm always quoting John Paul II. He said the best gift you can give your children is siblings.
Right.
So, you know, don't be too concerned if they just have a season where they're just playing with each other for a little while.
That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, Laura, that's how Laura and Mary and Carrie and Grace played, and they turned out just fine. And you know, the notion that somehow your children will be better adjusted if they're in a classroom with two dozen age mates. Modern kids are pretty depressed. They seem unhappy. They're on their phones constantly.
Yeah, I think you just have to spend 5 minutes looking at the news or, in social media to find out that that is just not true. Modern kids, in as young as elementary ages, are very troubled these days. And the public schools seem to have a lot to do with causing these troubles. You know, they're not mitigating it at all. And they're depressed and they're anxious and they have all kinds of, you know, issues. And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. So if anybody tries to tell you that you're somehow depriving your child of an active social life or good socialization by not sending them to these institutional insane asylums, that's what they're becoming. I'm sorry to say it. They're absolutely wrong. And you can completely debunk that.
Yeah. Yeah. What kids need and what we've known for millennia, the kids need is a loving family.
Right.
That's number one.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
A loving family. Nobody will ever say, you know, you might say, that's not true. I suppose when I got older, I can remember this friend or that friend and the good times we had. I don't see them anymore. I haven't seen them in decades. Really.
Yeah, me too. I
have nice memories, but
very nice memories of some, you know, fun childhood antics. But really, who stays with you your whole life? Your siblings, you know, your parents and your siblings and your cousins and your aunts and uncles and things like that. You need a loving family. That's the most important thing. So when you're keeping your kids home, working on those relationships is really the most important thing.
It is. Well, anyhow, I'd like to again thank our sponsors, all of our sponsors, especially Seton Home Study School. And the terrific staff in Front Royal, Virginia, that keeps Mary Ellen and I alive.
They keep us going. Jason, our producer and editor, and Robin, who designs our social media stuff, and Jim Shanley, who writes all of our show notes for us, because we just never seem to be able to get that done on our own. So, and just everybody else who's been very supportive.
And we're grateful for you. We're grateful to our listeners.
Yes.
Thank you for your support. Tell your buddies if you think you got something out of this and that it's a help to you. Tell your buddies.
Yeah.
And get on our Facebook page. We do have one, Stay at Homeschooling Mom podcast. And leave us a message. One lady just left us a message. What was it? What to do when you're drowning? How to homeschool when you're drowning?
How to homeschool when you're drowning. She had an adorable picture of, what was it, like six kids under seven or eight? The beautiful children, but I get what she's saying. So we're adding that to the list. We will be doing that in this little like roadblocks to homeschooling series. We're going to try to get going here. So send us your suggestions. We do read all of them.
And God bless you and your families.
God bless. And now we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Seton Home Study School. Seton Home Study School is a nationally accredited, faithfully Catholic, private distant learning school that serves students from pre-K through 12th grade. There are currently 17,000 homeschool students enrolled in Seton Home Study School and many, many more who use their books and materials, including several small Catholic schools. Since 1983, Seton Home Study School has faithfully served the homeschool community in the United States and all over the world. Please check out their website, setonhome.org, for more information. And thank you, Seton Home Study School, for sponsoring the podcast, The Stay-at-Home Schooling Moms.